Hey guys, how's it going? Welcome to the next episode of The Odd Coyote. I want to give a big shout out and thank you to all of our listeners. We have over 100 plays now on the podcast, so that's exciting. Keep sharing and talking about us. Follow us on Twitter at Odd Coyote. Keep downloading, listening, talking about it, sending in pieces to theoddcoyotepodcast@gmail.com and so forth. So thank you guys for making that happen. Very excited to have some other things on the horizon as far as getting creative work out, which we'll talk about in a next couple episodes or so. Today, I'm really excited. We have a story, or actually not a story, a chapter from a novella from Nicholas Poynter. So Nicholas Poynter and I went to the same MFA program, the Red Earth program at Oklahoma City University. There's a little free plug. Maybe they can give me like $20 sometimes. But Nicholas Poynter is a great writer. I've used his stories in the classroom. He's a great artist. He's a photographer as well, fellow teacher as well. He is interesting thing about Nicholas is he's ever since graduating the program, he's kind of all over the place. It's kind of where in the world is Nicholas Poynter, and he'll pop up on Facebook. He's in Mexico City, and then he's in Peru. I believe he's currently in Peru right now, but he is a very interesting writer. Tons of stories out there. If you enjoy this chapter of the novella, which is the second chapter from his novella, Machu Picchu Murder Club, then check out his website. It's pointerstories.com, P-O-Y-N-T-E-R stories.com. So pointerstories.com. Check out his stuff. No doubt we'll be seeing much, much more from him. I had the privilege of looking at his newest manuscript whenever he sent me this piece, and I'm in the middle of reading the novella right now. It's very, very good. As you will see, he has a good sense of action and plot and character, but there's kind of this undercurrent of dark humor or this kind of wit and observing the kind of odd and bizarre of everyday life. This exact piece that the novella is about is, as you will see, is about a cab driver. This is kind of set in the future, so we've got a little bit of a maybe, you know, semi-sci-fi kind of landscape going on. But he's in Lima, Peru, and Ubers basically are automated at this time. So there's no more taxi drivers in the earth, except for in Lima, because the traffic is too crazy. As you guys will see in the story, the programming and the computer technology can't handle the traffic of Lima, Peru. So it's the only place left. It's the last bastion of real deal taxi drivers where we find our main character at. And then he gets kind of looped into a plot of helping out these tourists. It's a dangerous landscape as some kind of communist rebels have taken over the country. And it's a very volatile and violent place at this time of the story. So setting the stage for lots of cool stuff, lots of action. Like I said, kind of an undercurrent of humor is certainly there, some dark humor. I think you'll really, really enjoy the piece. Travel, you know, thinking about in terms of outside of your own, you know, native country and getting out in the world, I feel like is always a opportunity for something out of the ordinary to happen, right? We're out of our comfort zone. We're out of the normal everyday life. Things are bound to happen. The first story that comes to mind from my own personal experience is I remember one of the times that I went to Paris, France. I was with my grandparents, and I was still a high school student, so I was young, just with my grandparents. And I knew this trip was coming at the beginning of my high school career. We had talked about it as far as a senior trip goes, going there. But when it came time to pick a language to study, I went with Spanish. I thought it would last more than the trip, and as opposed to taking French. And I thought that there was practical use. I worked at a Mexican restaurant as well. And so, you know, I had a pretty okay grasp of the Spanish language, no French whatsoever. And people would give me a hard time. Why didn't you take, you knew this trip was coming. How come you didn't take any French? Yeah, whatever. Well, we get there and Many Parisians speak English, so no big deal. We do end up at one part of the trip getting lost and kind of off track, and we're not really sure where our we were trying to hop onto a bus to get us back on the path of where we knew we would be in the city and where we were going to go. And so we were kind of lost in it. And yes, it would have been helpful to maybe know French at that time to speak to people or try to figure out where we were. But as it were, and it's at nighttime, so it's dark. There's not many people out. We end up on this street that's, you know, the walking population has thinned out, and it's, you know, we're starting to get that little, you know, we're not freaking out, we're not panicking, but that, like, okay, we need some things to start going our way again to find out where we are, orient ourselves. And it's just me and my grandparents. We run into the only other two people that seem to be near us on this side, kind of darkened alley. And it's this nice couple, this nice Argentinian couple, these two young men. And what language do they speak? Spanish. So in the middle of Paris, France, lost on a dark street, what is the only language that ends up helping us get back on track? It's Spanish. That's right. I was super excited to find out. I don't know how we figured out that they speak Spanish. But when we did, I realized I could communicate with them, and they helped us get back on track. So to the couple, the Argentinian couple, those two gentlemen, I appreciate you helping us all those years ago, getting us back on track. All to say that travel can kind of bring us out of our comfort zone. There's certainly opportunity for adventure and humor. So yeah, good stuff. But anyway, here is Nicholas Pointer's piece from an excerpt from the second chapter of Machu Picchu Murder Club. I also want you to bear with me, as this is by far the longest piece that I've read. It is 14 minutes and 43 seconds long, and I recorded it in one go, so I apologize if I stumble over any words. And once again, the music provided in the background is by Sebastian Kyler, so that is awesome. Thank you, Sebastian, for providing us with that soundtrack. So I hope you enjoy the piece, and remember to continue listening and continue to share. And reach out with pieces. Have a good one. Tito was sitting down for lunch when he saw the old couple emerge from the hotel across the Avalo. It had been weeks since he had seen actual tourists, months since he had seen any outside the Fortress Sheraton. So at first he was skeptical he was actually seeing what he was seeing. But they were the incarnation of tourists, lugging their heavy bags into a terror zone, no doubt looking for a manager to complain to about the lukewarm showers or the coffee tasting funny. Certainly they were in no danger because Jesus, the patron saint of white tourists, was with them. Well, Tito thought, these two will not live to see tomorrow. He thought they might be killed right there in front of him while he was enjoying a ceviche. Perhaps the manager would shoot them. But then he thought that business had been horrible, and he wasn't that hungry anyway. Maybe if he saved them, they would tip him, and he would buy a bottle of Pisco and call it a day. He was more thirsty than hungry. Tito nodded politely at their horrific attempts to communicate with him in Spanish. It was his policy to remain mute, lest somebody discover who he really was. With Peruvians, this was not a problem because they were as suspicious and reluctant to speak as he was. But tourists, the couple in the backseat specifically, seemed to need something verbally from him. "Okay, we go. Yes, I know," he finally mumbled to them. "I don't think he knows anything," the woman told her husband. "Understand me?" the man asked. "Inca market." Tito nodded at the man in the rearview mirror. "Dollars? Accept dollars?" Tito frowned. "Wait, wait," said the woman while rifling through her purse. "I still got their money." "But look, there's no meter. He could charge you whatever he wants at this point." Tito waited for the man. "50, no, what is the word for 50, dear? Corcunta." Tito shook his head. The woman pulled a 100 soles bill from a thick stack of them and held it in the air for her husband. Tito nodded emphatically, put the taxi in drive, and surged into the Avolo like a rocket, cutting off three lanes of traffic in the process. He paused for a moment in front of all the cars he had just screwed over and gave them his standard two-finger peace salute, first pointing to his own eyes, and then to theirs. "En Focanse," he yelled at them, and then sped away in an orchestration of horns and insults, chasing him down a Vida Arquepa. "Oh my God," she remarked. "Wait," the man whispered to his wife. "What did we just agree to pay him?" "Just fucking give it all to him. This is too ridiculous." She handed the bill to her husband, but when he started to pass the bill forward, she grabbed his hand and pulled it down into her lap. "Not now, dummy, when we arrive." "Oh, right." Tito was following the unfolding drama in the rearview mirror and very concerned with the whereabouts of the 100 soles bill when he caught a glimpse of brake lights in the distance flashing toward them like falling dominoes.
His taxi swerved sharply onto a side street without deaccelerating, the tires on the driver's side of the vehicle momentarily separating from the street surface and the passengers crashing into one another with such force that the woman's brassiere unlocked in the back. "Oh God," she moaned, one hand on her sternum and the other desperately groping behind her. Tito continued toward a blind intersection, pressing the horn twice deliberately, and then quickly receiving a single honk from both the left and the right in response, as per the intricate Lima honking code, which was written nowhere and taught by nobody, and had simply evolved like Darwinism over 100 years as the only possible way the whole mess was going to function. All approaching vehicles failed to comply with their respective stop signals, Tito's included, but the others deaccelerated a bit, just enough to allow Tito's taxi to slip between them like a goldfish through a child's fingers, avoiding two distinct side collisions by a meter or so. "Oh God," the woman repeated. "Let's see those Uber taxis do that," Tito said to himself, loud enough for his passengers to hear, his vigor hinting at a deep emotional wound he was carrying around. Lima was in fact the last major city on Earth without an automated taxi system, but oh how they had tried. There was just something in the nature of the traffic in Lima, 100 almost crashes every moment, but no actual crashes, that defied computer programming. The Uber cars had just sat there shaking until they ran out of fuel, and then when they had removed the safety features to get them moving, they had burst into flames instead. Those were the news reports that had brought Tito to Lima. The opportunity to continue with the only thing he seemed to be good at. After all, the taxi jobs in the States had disappeared overnight. That was what had brought him. He had no idea what was keeping him in Lima, other than the fact he had promised himself he was never going to pay those damn traffic tickets. Tito looked at the rearview mirror and saw the woman was wrestling with her clothing and had transitioned into an awkward state with her left breast exposed. He was dumbfounded. Nudity was against the rules in his taxi. Women had, of course, changed in his back seat before, but nobody had ever actually taken their breasts out before. He tried to ignore, but was drawn back to the mirror again and again, as if a spell had been cast upon him. She was old and fat, but not unattractive. "You speak English without an accent!" The man had snuck up on Tito from the side, undetected because Tito's attention was elsewhere, and had practically shouted in his ear, which caused Tito to jump, and subsequently caused the taxi to swerve onto the wrong side of the street. "Oh God!" Tito calmly maneuvered his taxi between two oncoming buses and then jerked the wheel, returning the taxi to the proper side of the street. The woman listing to the right during the initial maneuver and then rotating back to the left with such force that she became inverted and one of her shoes was launched out of the open window as a projectile. Tito watched it reverently in the side mirror as it entered a taxi behind him and struck the driver in the head. Physics, he thought to himself. He adored physics. This time, Tito was aware of the man returning to the position behind his ear, and he gripped the wheel tighter. "You're American!" Tito's right hand instinctively went to the pistol inside his jacket as he regarded the man up and down, the taxi moving forward, unsupervised. But he quickly surmised the man wasn't from the Tourist Commission, even though they did sometimes pose as Americans, even though they did a horrible job at it. Any Peruvian who could pass for an American had long since been mistaken for one and subsequently stabbed to death, or had fled to Cuba. No, Tito told himself, no need to worry about this one. The man was no tourism official and he certainly wasn't from immigration. Tito's hand relaxed and returned to the wheel. The man was simply an American and he would of course be dead soon. No need to worry. "Fresno," Tito said. "Your name is Fresno?" Tito closed his eyes. "I'm from Fresno. You call me Tito." "Tito?" "Yes, Tito." The man didn't seem to think Tito looked like a Tito. Of course he didn't. His real name, which he often forgot, was Larry. It was certainly not a good idea to be named Larry anymore, if it ever had been. "I'm Donnie, Donnie Black. This is my wife, Helen." The man turned to his wife, who had been knocked unconscious and was upside down with both her left boob still out and now her crotch exposed, the latter at eye level. "Helen?" he called to her sweetly. "Helen?" The man pulled his wife's legs down and checked her breathing, then gently slapped her across the face. "Helen!" He slapped her harder. Tito was relieved when the woman bolted upright and burped because he didn't want to divert to the hospital. The last time he had taken an unconscious tourist to the hospital, he had almost been summarily executed by the Tourist Commission, who hung out at the Fortress Sheridan Starbucks across the street all day long because they had nothing better to do. That was how it was. Half the country killing tourists, and the other half trying to kill the first half. Better to stay away from all that and remain neutral. And for all practical purposes, Tito was indeed neutral on the question of murdering Americans, even though he himself was technically one, from Fresno. Tito looked in the rearview mirror to see the man stuffing the woman's boob back into its holster while she, a fresh handprint on her face, glared at both of them, slowly and mechanically moving her head back and forth like a possessed doll in a horror movie. Tito was accustomed to that type of reaction. It did hurt his feelings that his passengers didn't appreciate him and his ability to traverse Lima so quickly while other less aggressive drivers were bogged down in traffic quagmires. Tell me what you want, people. Do you want to get there in 30 minutes or 2 hours? Okay, then fucking hang on to yourselves. If he had started off all slow and professional, she would have no doubt been glaring at him with even more ferocity, because being stuck in traffic was of course worse than anything else in life, including having your boob punched out or being slapped across the face. That was how it was with terrorists. They really had no idea what they wanted. They wanted an adventure, but they wanted safety just as much. Maybe that was why Tito didn't mind them being killed. Tito merged onto the expressway and pushed the engine to the red line for a minute in case there were kids at the Jockey Plaza, because those kids had developed a passion for throwing Molotov cocktails and had gotten really good at it. The man neared him once more. "Do you believe in fate, Mr. Fresno?" Tito's foot relaxed on the accelerator. Of course he believed in fate and the will of the universe. All taxi drivers did. You pull off the road for a cup of coffee, and your whole day changes in ways that are impossible to predict, and you will never know if it was made better or made worse. Maybe that cup of coffee cost you the best fare of your life, or maybe it saved you from a head-on collision. You will never know. You can't fight it, the universe, fate. You must submit to it, pray to it. Tito indicated to the man that he was indeed a disciple of fate. "Good," the man responded. "Yesterday, our English-speaking guide was shot dead at the airport, and this has put us in a horrible spot because we do not speak Spanish, and there seems to be no Peruvians who speak English. I assume you speak Spanish?" Tito nodded that he did. "Well, not only could you serve as a translator, but you are an actual American, and we would feel so much more comfortable with an American, especially after the unfortunate misunderstanding at the airport. I believe in fate, and I think fate has given you to us. I would like to contract you to be our guide." "The dead guide? Did he reserve that hotel for you?" "Yes, the people who shot him. Were they wearing crimson capes and really long boots, like up to the knee, weirdo type boots?" "You seem to know our circumstances better than we do, Mr. Fresno." "There are many scam guides. They bring in tourists and they hand them directly over to the guerrillas for target practice. You are lucky the tourist commission had a kill on site order for him." "But we got his name from the embassy." "The Americans fled the embassy 6 months ago. They left the doors unlocked and didn't cancel any services. You can't cancel a cable contract from abroad, so until they send someone back, which they won't, they'll be paying those bills. Every morning people go in to hang out, watch movies, cook lunch. There's no predicting who is answering the telephones there. Don't call the embassy." Tito avoided a stalled line of cars by expertly deaccelerating just enough to skip over a 4-inch curb without breaking the axle. Both passengers were again thrown into one another, and even though this time they were more prepared, the woman still took another punch, this time to the windpipe. Tito saw her grab her throat with both hands in the rearview mirror as the man returned to his perch behind his ear. "So, Mr. Fresno, what do you think about being our guide?" What Tito thought was that he was running out of time in Lima, Peru. As much as he was neutral on the issue of murdering tourists, there were of course potential clients, and now it was harder and harder to make any money. It might just be the only way to leave with enough cash to start over somewhere else, almost certainly in Cuba, and almost certainly in a whole new occupation. Blackjack dealer, bartender, carpet salesman, he had no idea. He had taken guide contracts before, and they had been good work, easy work. But of course, that had been before Tupac Trujillo started planting communist flags on top of every hill he could find. But if he was the type of intelligent person who was worried about things like communist guerrillas, then he never would have migrated to Peru in the first place. Do you want to know the specifics of the job?" the old man asked. "I know what the job is," Tito replied. "There was only one reason a rich tourist traveled to Peru anymore. You know the risk? Just last week, the guerrillas blew the bridges. They took the last train, marked it all up with graffiti. Gringo Soul Train, they called it, then drove it off a 5,000-foot cliff into the river. Yes, it seems as if very soon the window will be closed. Maybe not for forever, but at least our lifespans. That is why we are still here, Mr. Fresno. We want to see Machu Picchu. It is the last one on the list, and we are determined to see it. Yes, we understand the risks, and we have the money, more than enough money. You could hire 4 to 6 men in security with what we would pay you. We have come a long way, and we don't want to turn back now." "Well, the idea would be to not encounter Tupac. 4 to 6 men with shotguns are not going to protect you against Tupac. The idea would be to go undetected, and in that case, the fewer we are, the better. I'm just spitballing out loud now, but I imagine the best way into Machu Picchu would be through the jungle, coming back around from the east. The old man exchanged a worried look with his wife. But we are thinking helicopter. We have the money. Helicopter? First of all, you would need to refuel. Where? Second of all, there are no helicopters. They have all been blown out of the sky. Blowing up a helicopter is not even hard. Kids are refitting drones to do it for their school science projects. The man closed his fist tightly. We are determined, Mr. Fresno. Jungle it is. We're talking about a lot of traveling. Maybe a month, with at least a week on a riverboat, sleeping in a hammock on a deck with giant bugs everywhere. But could it be done? I don't know why not. It would be a simple flanking maneuver. Tupac's army is basically just a bunch of unemployed Kuskiskans marching with machetes, still bitching about the whole Pizarro thing. No recon, no intel. I don't see why we couldn't just circle around them. And then you would have the whole place to yourselves. You could camp in the valley for a week if you wanted. The man returned to his wife, and Tito watched them carefully in the rearview mirror. All of a sudden, he really wanted the job. All of a sudden, he was sick of driving a taxi. He began to panic. The old man and his sexy fat wife were certainly the last chance he had. If they decided not to offer him the job or got killed before they could pay him, then what? Tito, of course, already knew what would be next. He had felt it coming for months, but he had tried to ignore it, like he had tried to ignore the woman's left boob. But now it was certainly clear right in front of him. Suicide. It was right back to where he had been before he left the States, except that now he carried a loaded pistol. His hands started shaking on the wheel, and he took them off one at a time to flex the muscles and try to relax them. He thought maybe he should pull over. He was certainly experiencing some sort of panic attack. Tito felt the man's hand grasp his shoulder tightly. We should sit down somewhere then and map this whole thing out, sign a contract, and get you some cash to get things started. When Tito heard the words, "get you some cash," his taxi driver reflexes took over, and he pulled an illegal U-turn at high speed, fishtailing toward Avenida Javier Prado, the Fortress Sheraton, and the last Starbucks in South America.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that action-filled, character-filled piece by Nicholas Poynter. Thanks again, Nick, for getting us that piece and sharing with us part of your new work. We hope to see that in print and publication soon as you get that work out there, along with the other stories. Again, check out his site, pointerstories.com. So check that out. Keep listening, keep sharing. Again, thanks for stopping by, and enjoy the rest of your summer.